And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello, and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today, we have in our program, Dr. Mary Newport. Dr. Newport is board certified in pediatrics and neonatology. She has practiced neonatology in Florida for 30 years and was the founding medical director of two newborn intensive care units in Tampa Bay. Dr. Newport is also the caregiver for her husband of 41 years, Steve, who suffers from early onset Alzheimer's disease. She is the author of the book, Alzheimer's Disease, What If There Was a Cure? The Story of Ketones, now in its second edition. She has been the guest to numerous conferences and educational events worldwide, where she has had the opportunity to share her experience and her findings concerning this specific and very important subject. We are extremely pleased that Dr. Newport has agreed to come and spend time with us today. She is joining us via Skype all the way from Florida. Hello, Dr. Newport. How are you today?
I am fine, Rebecca. Thank you so much for inviting me to come on your podcast.
Thank you so much. We're very, very pleased that you agreed to come and talk to us. Lifestyle improvement, of course, is for caregivers, but also we deal with a lot of subjects. And today, let me jump right to the point of this specific issue. The title of your book, in my opinion, should stop all the presses. It should be on the front page of every newspaper in America, especially with the grim statistics that the Chicago Health and Aging Project suggested that the cases of Alzheimer's would triple by the year 2050. You would think this type of information would be breaking news, but when I looked at so many of the large organizations supporting this condition, I was not able to find much information connected to this. How did you come across this, Dr. Newport?
Well, it was actually completely by accident. My husband has early onset Alzheimer's, as you mentioned, and he was wanting to get into a clinical trial. We were wanting to get him into a clinical trial, you know, with a medication for Alzheimer's. And he was screening 2 days in a row for two different drugs. And I was looking at the risks and the benefits of these two drugs on the internet, and I came across a third treatment that I had not heard about before. It was a medical food that was going to be coming out in another year or so. And it basically said that it improved the memory and cognition in almost half of the people with Alzheimer's who took it. But it didn't say what it was or how it worked. So I became very curious about this because you never hear that about Alzheimer's meds. They don't normally ever say that they improve memory and cognition. They might slow the course of the disease for 6 months or so. So I found their patent application online. It's a free patentsonline.com. You can look up any U.S. patent and read the whole thing. And it was a 75-page document, and it was very well written. Description of Alzheimer's disease and what's known about it. And it emphasized a particular aspect of Alzheimer's disease that I was not familiar with before, that it is a type of diabetes of the brain. And most people are not aware of that. You hear about plaques and tangles in the brain and Alzheimer's and millions of dollars, billions of dollars probably of research worldwide has been aimed at trying to eliminate these plaques and now tangles from the brain in hopes that this would help improve cognition and memory in people with Alzheimer's, but to no avail so far. You know, these drugs have not proven, even when they do remove plaque, to do anything to improve cognition. So it's been very disappointing results from all of these billions of dollars. This is another aspect that just hasn't gotten much awareness, that it is a type of diabetes of the brain. And what that means is that, well, basically a group at Brown University, along with many other groups, but this one in particular, I focus on because they coined the term that Alzheimer's is type 3 diabetes. People are familiar with type 1, which is, you know, when your pancreas basically stops making insulin and you have to take insulin shots. And then type 2 is more where you develop insulin resistance, where your cells just don't respond to insulin very well in certain organs. And glucose then cannot get into the cell normally. glucose requires insulin to get into cells, and glucose is the fuel for most of the organs of our body, and in particular, our brain uses a great deal of glucose. It uses about 25% of the glucose. You know, it's a very active organ, you know, and even though it's relatively small, it uses about 25% of the glucose that we take in. Mm-hmm. So very important to the brain to have energy. Mm-hmm. And what they found in the research, they looked at the brains of people who died with Alzheimer's disease that did not have type 1 or type 2 diabetes. And they found that these people had insulin deficiency and insulin resistance in their brains. And that basically over time, the cells apparently malfunction and die from lack of energy available to the brain. And they coined the term in 2005, type 3 diabetes. So that's already 10 years ago, which kind of boggles my mind.
Right.
That exactly. it still hasn't gotten more awareness.
It's incredible.
And then, you know, they continued the research and they looked at various stages of the disease. And they found that this is limited to certain areas of the brain in the earliest stages, and then it becomes very widespread and severe throughout the brain in the later stages of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like it spreads. To me, it's almost like an infection or something, you know, that seems to, this condition spreads throughout the brain. You know, that's where this concept then evolved into a medical food that addressed this idea of what if you could give an alternative fuel to the brain. If the brain cannot accept glucose, certain cells in the brain, certain areas of the brain, is there an alternative fuel that you might be able to provide the brain? And it turns out that there is.
Yeah.
We would not have survived as a species if we did not have the ability to use ketones in our brain as an alternative fuel. And basically, our ancestors and people today have periods where they starve and they have food and they have to go out and hunt, you know, but they don't have food for days sometimes, you know. Humans are able to put fat on their bodies when they have excess food. So when a person starts to fast or starve, doesn't have food intake for 36 or 48 hours, you use up all the carbohydrates stored in your body within that period of time. And then if you did not have fat, you would just simply start breaking down muscle until you had no more muscle. And that would be 7 to 10 days, you know, so that would be about the maximum that you could live, even if you had water available, you know, maybe 10 days. But because we have fat, we start also breaking down fat in that situation. And some of the fatty acids are used by muscle and the heart. The heart and muscle just turn right over to using these fatty acids, but they don't cross the blood-brain barrier. They don't get to the brain. So some of the fatty acid goes to the liver and is broken down into tiny molecules called ketones. Mm-hmm. And the ketones cross the blood-brain barrier and are very easily taken up by the brain as fuel. And they don't require insulin to get into the brain. They use different transporters to get into the brain, but they enter the very same path of chemical reactions that leads to making ATP, which is the final energy molecule that basically carries out all the functions, allows the cells to carry out their functions.
Wow.
So here you have ketones that can provide alternative fuel to the brain. But, you know, starving is not very practical for treating diseases. And they actually used to treat diabetes this way before insulin.
Wow.
They would do, you know, periods of fasting.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that if a person fasted or not, was not taking in any sugar, basically, that they could, it could prolong their life, but maybe for a year at the most. And then they would finally die from type 1 diabetes. And another situation in which fasting was used was for epilepsy. There were some references to it in the Bible. Jesus, he was asked how to cure someone with epilepsy, and he said fasting and prayer is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And this was used as a treatment sometimes for epilepsy, where you would fast a person for 5 days or 7 days. You know, basically, they didn't know it, what was going on, but they can preserve the brain because of the ketones that are being put out from breakdown of fat.
Right. This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuke Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuke practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
Basically, I didn't know it, what was going on, but they can preserve the brain because of the ketones that are being put out from breakdown of fat.
Right.
Interesting, huh?
Very interesting. So you came across this information and it just, a light bulb came up and you just turned on and you said, this is something that maybe you can use for Steve or your husband for Alzheimer's?
For Steve, yeah. But the medical food, the interesting thing about it is it's called medium chain triglyceride oil that they had developed, and we'll call it MCT oil. That's how it's abbreviated. And I was familiar with this MCT oil because we used it in the feedings of our premature newborns back in the late 70s and early 80s when I was in training. We would add it to their feedings. They tolerated it very well, and they would gain weight faster. And then they started adding it to all of the infant formulas. So if you look on the label today of any infant formula, you'll see MCT oil.
Which is fatty acids.
It's fatty acids, medium chain fatty acids. And so the other thing you'll see on the label is coconut oil.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And when I was reading through the patent application, one time they mentioned that MCT oil is extracted from coconut oil. And I did not know that at that point. Mm-hmm. But the medium chain triglycerides are found in human breast milk. And that's why one of the reasons they're added to infant formula to try to mimic human breast milk. And breast milk is the only situation in which a human will basically create medium chain triglycerides in their own body is into human breast milk. So another interesting thing is that human babies are fat compared to other mammals. And if you know you're a woman who is breastfed, you know that your milk takes 36 or 48 hours to come in, and you think your baby's starving. You know, how is this baby surviving on nothing or almost nothing, just a little colostrum, you know, for a day and a half or 2 days? And it's because they're fat.
Huh.
They start breaking down their fat and they start producing ketones. Mm-hmm. And ketones provide something like a quarter of the energy requirement of the newborn during those first days of life until the mother's milk comes in fully. But then they still get the benefit of the medium chain triglycerides, which are converted in the liver to ketones.
Aha. There you go. There's the connection, right?
There's the connection. Yeah. So these MCTs are converted to ketones. Mm-hmm. Part of it converted to ketones. The medium chain triglycerides themselves are never stored as fat. Mm. They're used directly as energy. They can be used in muscle. They can be used in brain cells. So they may also be alternative fuels, you know, for the brain. And this company basically had developed a medical food. The man who had this brilliant idea was is Dr. Sam Henderson, and his mother had Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Richard Veach, he is a world expert on ketones. He published a paper right around the year 2000 in which he had done studies of ketones in neurons that were subjected to toxins that produced Alzheimer's in some of them and Parkinson's in some of the others. And they found when they mixed ketones in, as opposed to not adding ketones, that the cultures of neurons with the ketones, there were many more surviving neurons.
Wow.
And so this happened in 2000. And then I think the way it probably happened was Dr. Henderson, you know, saw this article. The timing was just exactly the same at the time that he filed a patent application to start working on a medical food, you know, that would potentially help people with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, here I am reading about this on a Friday night, you know, with my husband, getting ready to test, you know, for one drug one day, another drug the next day. And it was about 1 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't go out and buy coconut oil at that point. I didn't know MCT oil was on the shelf. It actually is on the shelf. You don't have to buy it as a medical food. So we went for the screening. It was around 9 o'clock in the morning. and he did not do well. There's a test called the mini mental status exam. It's a 30-point test. It's a simple memory test. And if you're normal, you'll get 30, maybe 29. But he got only 14 on that test. Mm-hmm. And he needed at least 16 points to even qualify for this clinical trial. So we were extremely disappointed.
Right.
And the doctor said, she asked him to draw a clock. There's a clock test for Alzheimer's that's very specific for mm-hmm. Alzheimer's. And what he drew was just a few little circles and a few numbers. It didn't look anything like a clock. It wasn't organized. And she told me that he was on the verge of severe Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. I was surprised and yet not surprised. Mm-hmm. Pretty shocked, really, to see that drawing. And on the way home, I decided, what do we have to lose? I'm going to go pick up some coconut oil.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'd seen it in health food stores. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had seen it at one particular, and it turned out it was in all the health food stores, even in our area. Mm-hmm. But I went mm-hmm. an hour out of yeah. the way, you know,
right,
to get
right.
some.
Yeah, it's out there.
And it's out there. Yeah. And, you know, I had always heard the myths, you know, coconut oil clogs arteries and all this kind of thing. So I always wondered why it was in health food stores, you know, but I thought I'm going to buy some and find out more about this coconut oil. And when I got home, I looked up the composition, the fatty acid composition of coconut oil to try to learn more about it. And there's a government website where you can find out these things. Mm-hmm. And what I learned was that about 60% of the fats in coconut oil are medium-chain triglycerides.
Mm.
Yeah. So then I was able to figure out from that how much coconut oil that would equal the medical food dosage that they had used in their studies. And it worked out to 7 teaspoons, 35 mLs, a little over 2 tablespoons.
2 tablespoons per day?
This was 2 tablespoons in a dose is what I gave Steve, although we were really lucky that he did not have diarrhea that first time
correct.
That he took it.
Yes.
Because many people, if they yes. haven't taken coconut oil before or, you know, mm-hmm. certain other oils will mm-hmm. do that too.
Right.
If you take too much, too fast, it mm-hmm. will cause some pretty explosive diarrhea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we were lucky that that didn't happen
yes.
to him, because that would have been very discouraging right off the bat, you
right.
know. So the next morning for breakfast, he was scheduled for his screening at 1 p.m. So that was another lucky stroke mm-hmm. there. And I put coconut oil in some oatmeal form because it's solid at room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this case, we thought putting it in something warm made sense. So we put it in some oatmeal and he ate it. And I took 2 tablespoons too. And I got indigestion. Steve didn't have any complaints.
You're the one who got the indigestion.
I got indigestion. But I thought, I'm not going to make him eat anything that I don't want to eat, you know.
Right.
And we went for the screening, and it just happened about 4 hours after he ate that he had his MMSE test,
mm-hmm.
and he gained 4 points on the test. His score was 18 instead of 14 out of 30, and he actually qualified for the study.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Such quick results.
Right, right. You think, how could one dose do anything?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when this company that developed the medical food, their first pilot study that they did was 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they each came 2 times. One time they got the MCT oil, the other time they didn't. And it was one dose, and they had cognitive testing before and 90 minutes after each dose. And what they found was almost half of them, after they got the MCT oil, had an improvement in their testing. And that was just with one dose.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's literally like fuel in the tank. Like a car is just sitting there without gasoline. You put the fuel in and it runs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I just kind of picture, you know, that is what might be happening in the brain. And one of the things that supports this is there is a Dr. Stephen Cunane. He's at Sherbrooke University in Quebec in
mm-hmm.
Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the world's only ketone PET scanner. He can do PET scans with ketones, and he does also the same day, he does a glucose PET scan.
Mm-hmm.
So he looks for glucose uptake in the brain and ketone uptake in the brain. And he just recently published this. They have found that, in fact, you know, people with Alzheimer's, as is already known, have decreased glucose uptake in certain parts of the brain, not all parts, but certain
mm-hmm.
parts of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Those very same areas take up ketones normally.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. That's just amazing. The connection is so clear.
It is. And one of the things that's so kind of crazy about this
mm-hmm.
is for years, researchers assumed that because there was poor glucose uptake, that that indicated there were neurons that had died in those areas, that mm-hmm. neurons had died off and those areas were useless, you know, so mm-hmm. to speak. Mm-hmm. But this kind of shows that they, in fact, might be just like little cars waiting for fuel, you know, the neurons just waiting there. And so it explains, you know, how someone like Steve could have a dose of this and improve his test score right away. And when that happened, I mean, my first thoughts were, okay, this could just be a lucky accident, you know, or prayers, which we were praying really hard that he would do well and get into his clinical trial, mm-hmm. and or it could be the coconut oil. And so I decided to keep it going. We started every day. And so every morning he got his 35 mLs, a little over 2 tablespoons of coconut oil. And then I started cooking with it. I just got every recipe I could get my hands on, several cookbooks. And mm-hmm. I thought, you know, we're just going to use this instead of other oils in his diet. And I mean, it's actually good. I mean, I just mm-hmm. fell in love with coconut oil. Yummy. And everything coconut, yeah. uh-huh. coconut milk and flake coconut. And I mean, everything you can think of. There's coconut ice creams out there.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
yeah. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. Because, you know, I thought, why just one dose a day? I mean, this medical food, it came out a year later. And it basically was tested for one dose a day. And that's all they're allowed to instruct people to use, because that's what was tested. The FDA won't allow them to say, oh, you can take 2 or 3 or 4 doses a day. Mm-hmm. You know, they're stuck with one dose for now until they do further testing with mm-hmm. multiple doses. Mm-hmm. So one of the interesting things is when you measure ketone levels after you take MCT oil, it goes up and peaks at about 90 minutes and it's gone. The ketones are gone after about 3 hours or so. So then mm-hmm. what do you do the other 21 hours of the day? Right. That's how I look at it. So why not have some for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and maybe before you go to bed?
Right.
So this is what we started doing with Steve. And we started mixing coconut and MCT oil. Dr. Richard Beach encouraged me to use more MCT oil with him. I kind of stayed in touch with him, and he has developed a ketone ester that can take ketone levels 10 to 20 times higher than what you can get from MCT oil or coconut oil.
So if the MCT, I noticed also that they have MCT, you know, from coconut oil.
That's where it's extracted from. Almost right. Most MCTs is extracted from coconut oil or palm kernel oil, which is similar to coconut oil.
So do you have both coconut oil and MCT oil?
Yeah.
How does
yeah.
that work?
So the first month, we just used coconut oil, mm-hmm. and Steve improved a lot. I mean, it wasn't just that test. I mean, that day, I mean, it was like the next day and the day after that, he started coming out instead of very sluggish in the morning and making almost no conversation. And he had lost his sense of humor and his affect was very flat. He would come bouncing down the hall, whistling and making jokes and talking right away. And I thought, wow, I felt like really, I mean, by the 4th or 5th day, I felt like I had gotten my husband back.
Wow.
He was just a different person. And he told me that he felt like the very first time he took it, that the light switch came on in his brain again. And there was hope for his future. He felt mm-hmm. like he was no longer, he always was very aware mm-hmm. of his disease. And he felt like he was, you know, dying and that there was no hope, because that's mm-hmm. what you're told, you know, with Alzheimer's mm-hmm. disease. And so he felt like there was hope for his future, and his depression lifted very significantly. And he had interesting physical symptoms that improved. One was tremors. He had tremors in his hands when he would try to eat. He, you know, had to use a big spoon because things would fall off the fork because he would tremor. And when he would try to talk, he would get lost mid-sentence, and then his jaw would start to tremor. He just couldn't keep his train of thought. And that all improved very quickly. Within a couple of days, it was obvious he wasn't having these tremors. And mm-hmm. the only time the jaw tremor went away, never came back. We never saw that again. The hand tremor we would see sometimes in the morning before he got his first dose of coconut oil. And then he had a weird gait. He couldn't run just because he couldn't physically pick his feet up and run. Mm-hmm. And he walked weird. He just slow, and he'd pick his feet up higher than normal, kind of a stiff gait, I guess. And about 2 to 3 months after he started the coconut oil, his gait normalized and he was able to run again.
Wow. That's amazing.
Amazing. And then another amazing thing was that he had trouble with reading for about a year and a half, and he couldn't explain what it was. I thought he just maybe couldn't comprehend or just couldn't focus on it or something. He was a guy who read novel after novel after novel, and then just suddenly he couldn't read anymore. And about 3 or 4 months after we started the coconut oil, he said, "Oh, I can read again." And I said, "Huh." And he read for me, and I mean, some long words. It was like a story about Buffett that he read, you know, out to me. And I said, "So what was the problem?" And he said, "Well, the words would go into little boxes like pixels and move around on the screen like satellite breakup or something." And he couldn't read because the words were just shaking around on the page. And that stopped after 3 or 4 months. It
that
stopped
is incredible.
Doing
it. Incredible.
And that never came back.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, you know, his ability to make conversation improved. He recognized family members that he did not recognize a year earlier when we went to a family reunion. I mean, he couldn't remember their names. And this time he just read them right away by their names. And everyone was like, "Wow, last year we couldn't even get him into a conversation, you know, and now this year he's talking to us. He was making jokes." It was just a funny thing. I mean, when you text the word mom, you know how you used to have to do three things. It's 666. And my sister said this, mentioned this, and Steve laughed. He knew what the reference was, you know. And I mean, there's things like that that happen, you know, that everybody was like, "Wow, he's so different than he was a year earlier. He's so much better."
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Lifestyle Improvement for part one of our interview with Dr. Mary Newport. Dr. Newport is board certified in pediatrics and neonatology and has practiced neonatology in Florida for over 30 years. She is also the author of the book, Alzheimer's Disease: What If There Was a Cure? Don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning at 7:30 for part two of our interview with Dr. Mary Newport.